Chapter 3, Striving Toward the Goal. Miss Brown, you will be required to teach bookkeeping and geography as well as the science subjects. The headmistress of the Exeter Girls High School could hardly realize what panic she had aroused in the mind of this, her newest teacher. Edith Brown was now entering the earning period where each penny would be jealously guarded against the great goal she had set for herself. She had anticipated difficulties on entering the field of teaching, but to be required to teach bookkeeping and geography was beyond her. She had slight, if any, knowledge of these two subjects. In the teacher's common room, she broached the subject of her ignorance of some of the subjects she was expected to teach. To her amazement, the other teachers treated the matter as a joke. It seemed that they had all been assigned some course for which they were not prepared. Her surprise was committed to writing. Among the staff, it was a joke. One would ask, "Do you know such and such a subject?" And the reply was, "I've never even taught it." Edith approached the problem with her usual combination of determination and faith. Her faith was rewarded in an amazing way. "I was asked to teach bookkeeping, about which I knew very little. But that first day, a very simple and clear book on bookkeeping arrived by post from I do not know where. I was able to master it and teach the subject satisfactorily." Here was another in the sequence of incidents which she held up as evidence of divine guidance and planning for her career. It is true that this short period of training in bookkeeping worked out to her great advantage years later, when she had responsibility for maintaining and supervising the complicated accounts of the medical college and hospital in India. The subject of geography was a different sort of problem. Geography was more difficult than bookkeeping, as I never could remember counties and capitals, she confided to her diary. But I began with physical geography, which is always interesting, and led the girls to think of the rivers, ports, trade, etc., and when it came to capitals, counties, and so on, I had certain girls prepared to ask questions, and others came up to point them out on the map, but they might only ask when they were sure of the answer and could correct the others. So my ignorance was not evident. Here, in simple form, we find the type of strategy Edith Brown was capable of using. The time at Exeter was also a period of good training in personal finances. Top value had to be coaxed from every penny, so she lived in cheap rooms, did her own cleaning and cooking, and was most frugal in the money she spent for clothing and other personal needs. Since her salary was £120 per year, the attainment of medical school was a long way off. To expedite matters somewhat, she decided to ignore doctor's orders and spent many of her evenings giving private coaching to students. This work helped supplement her funds considerably. She still continued her habit of getting up at 4 a.m. each day for the time of quiet Bible study and private devotions. During her second year at Exeter, another incident occurred which she claimed was divine validation of her future plans. She received an invitation to spend the weekend with Mrs. Edward Robinson at her home in Bristol. During that visit, Mrs. Robinson discussed with Edith Brown her plans to go out to India as a doctor. She had heard of Edith's plans and apparently had discussed them with some of her friends. She was the leader of a local committee for the Baptist Zenana Mission Society, which had recently been studying the mission's plans for expanding their work in India. These plans included the operation of hospitals and dispensaries. So far, their mission society had no doctors on the field. Mrs. Robinson put a proposal to Edith Brown. If she would covenant to go out to India under their auspices to open up new fields of labor, Mrs. Robinson would undertake to supply the remainder of the funds necessary for Edith to undertake her medical training. Surely this was an answer to prayer and a great response to faith. What was her reaction? "I felt the Lord had sent the money, and I rejoiced." May 1887 found Edith Brown once again being counted in the ranks of the pioneers. In that month, she enrolled for medical studies at the London School of Medicine for Women and the Royal Free Hospital. She wanted to take the Cambridge or London MBA, but Cambridge would not permit women to take the degree. For the London University degree, she would have to go backward in her training by studying for the London University matriculation, and then 2 years later, taking the London Intermediate Science Examination before even beginning the medical course. Truly, there were difficulties in the way for these early women students, but all 14 women in her class went ahead with their studies and helped to blaze a path for others to follow. It was a time of difficult decision for Edith Brown. She wanted to finish her training and receive qualification with the minimum delay. But how could this best be accomplished? She tells us in her own words, "As all the students studied together, I decided that it was a question not of the knowledge to be gained, but of the honor of the degree, and that the right way was to give up the London MBBS and take the licentiate of the Scotch colleges and begin at once." Economy was still the order of the day. She and another student, Miss Beck, took two rooms on the first floor of a house in Brunswick Square, just 3 minutes' walk from the hospital. The two women planned a balanced schedule to help eke out their finances. Edith, through her habit of early rising, was able to have a fire going in her room, where she cooked the breakfast of porridge and eggs, and both girls ate by the fire. A woman came in to cook dinner for them, and this they had in Miss Beck's room. They ate their midday meal at an inexpensive restaurant near the hospital. It was always a relief to both girls when Saturday came. Then they went off to spend the weekend with their families to enjoy good home cooking without being mindful of how much it was going to cost. Weekend was the time of happy reunion with the family, to be fussed over by her two sisters, and to be carefree for a short space of time. During the first winter, when she was studying anatomy, there was an account in China's Millions of how Hudson Taylor pricked his finger when doing anatomy, and as a result was seriously ill for some time from an infected hand. Edith's two sisters, alarmed at this account, offered to do all her sewing, lest she should prick her finger. So Edith took her sewing home each week. "I was not sorry, for I was never fond of sewing," she wrote. From their weekend home visit, each girl would bring back a box of extras to supplement their food supply. Edith Brown was always mindful that her primary calling was to be a Christian and to tell others of Christ's redeeming love. During her Girton years, she had enjoyed the Bible studies very much. It was a chance for her to grow in her understanding of the Christian faith. Even during the very demanding and busy days of medical study, she still was faithful and became regular teacher of a Bible class in Croydon. She continued her own spiritual growth by attending church in London. This was an important period of challenge for her. Some of the church sessions remained in her memory for the rest of her life. In her diary, she makes mention of one lesson she carried with her. "The Presbyterian Church was in Brunswick Square, and I used often to slip in there on Wednesday evenings and had many a helpful message. One I have never forgotten was on Elijah's loss of courage and how God dealt with him and said, 'Go, return.' And the remark was made that when Elijah was down, he was no taller than any of us." During the years of college and medical school, Edith made a number of friends, but she did not develop any lifelong friendships. It always seemed that she was passing through a transitory stage to a more permanent life beyond. Miss Beck, with whom she roomed for 4 years, was one of these friends. They had a mutual respect and understanding for one another's spiritual viewpoint, yet they represented rather a strange combination, Plymouth Brethren and Quaker. Miss Beck went out to the mission field as a Quaker missionary doctor. Another friend is memorialized in Edith Brown's journal because of a spiritual message she taught. "I spent the holidays with friends and met a girl a few years older than myself, Minnie Glaholm, who was training to be a deaconess at Mildmay. We walked together in a lovely garden by moonlight, and she drew my attention to the moon, asking why the moon made everything so beautiful when otherwise all would be dark. Though we could not see the sun, the moon could. There was nothing between, and she could help us. In the same way, if we let there be nothing between, we may show the glory and beauty of the Lord, and by our very lives, shining for Him, help others. I realized as never before the duty of shining for Him, and it has often helped me. The days in Brunswick Square were busy ones for a serious and dedicated student. Her diligence was noticed by the instructors, and she received special instruction and extra participation in gynecology classes. The professor of dentistry, who wished to give her every assistance, allowed her to attend patients in his private surgery. It was a tired student who made her way back to Brunswick Square many evenings. But there was a welcome and familiar figure on the street corner who would call out a greeting to her. He was the old gentleman who sold her hot potatoes and hot chestnuts. She would pause to chat with him and purchase a potato. Then she would walk on to her room, passing the hot potato from one hand to the other to warm her chilled hands. It also made a tasty morsel to eat when she got home. The years of serious labor brought their reward. In May 1891, Edith Brown, at the age of 27, had successfully completed her medical training. On completion of the formal studies, she had traveled up to Glasgow and Edinburgh to take the examinations for licentiate of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons, Edinburgh, more commonly recognized by the letters CR, CP, and SE. She had taken her midwifery in Dublin at the Rotunda under the tutelage of Sir William Smiley, who was to be an ardent supporter of her work for many years. The remaining goal was Doctor of Medicine, which she could not receive in her own country. Therefore, she planned to travel to Belgium and receive the Brussels MD. The work for it had already been completed in London, so she spent 1 month in Brussels in preparation for and taking the final examinations of that university. Here again she was successful. Such was the brilliance of her intellect that she could say at the end of her formal educational career, including high school, Girton College, and medical school, that she had never once failed an examination. Following the examinations and final qualification, there was much preparation for the long journey ahead. India and a new life. Final agreement had been reached with the Baptist Zenana Mission about the steamship passage and the equipment she should take to pioneer medical work in a new section of India. Kitchen utensils, dishes, linens, curtains, and many other housekeeping items were garnered from the homes of various friends. Writing from the lonely, isolated mission station of Palwal 18 months later, she expressed her gratitude for this initial equipping of a new missionary. "I go over for dinner to the other missionaries, and otherwise live rather in picnic style, though I take care to have plenty to eat. I am very grateful for all the various things that were given to me before I came out, furniture and household things, canteen cooking set, coffee pot, teapot, lamps, etc., and think I may say that I have hardly anything that is not in constant use, and yet that I have had to buy hardly anything here. The walls are about 20 inches deep and have many recesses in them about 6 inches deep, and these act as shelves on which I keep my tea things, tray, teapot, tea kettle, and lamp. The lamp burns beautifully, and I use it constantly. The walls are of brick with a thin coating of whitewash. I am so glad for the pictures I have, those of Keswick, of Redhill, and of Howth, which are such a refreshment to look at. During those weeks at home in Croydon, contacts were being developed which would lead to an inexplicable interweaving of lives and destinies. Not far from the Brown family lived Miss E. A. Greenfield. She was deeply devoted to mission work in India because her sister Rose A. Greenfield had been in that country for almost 20 years and was head of the Zenana Mission at Ludhiana in Punjab. From this sister had come an appeal for help in recruiting a woman doctor to take charge of the small hospital which she had started 10 years previously. Negotiations were made with Edith Brown and the Baptist Zenana Mission to see if the young English doctor could spend her initial year learning the country and the language at the hospital in Ludhiana, releasing Rose Greenfield for a much-needed furlough in Britain. This arrangement was approved by all concerned. So, from the home center of Croydon, forces were working to draw these two unique women into what was to prove to be a significant and creative relationship. At this time, Miss Brown met the first of her fellow workers in India. In Ludhiana, two sisters, Miss E.L.M. and Miss A.A.M. Pogson, were working with Miss Greenfield under the auspices of the Society for the Promotion of Female Education in the East, or, as it was better known, the Female Education Society. These two ladies were of English parentage, but had spent most of their lives in India, where their father had been a high-ranking military officer. Now in the spring of 1891, Miss A.A.M. Pogson was on leave in Croydon and staying at the home of Miss Greenfield, so the meeting of these two women took place in the closeness of the family circle, developing into a friendship which was to continue for many years. It was fitting that Edith's last summer should permit a special visit back to the beloved hills and lakes of Cumberland. She received an invitation to the Keswick Convention and spent a most enjoyable and helpful week there. This also enabled her to meet many old family friends in Keswick, Kendal, and Whitehaven. This quiet time, spent in surroundings so dear, was a spiritual valedictory to one who was going to roam far afield in response to a vision of the needs of humanity in a hot and crowded land.